now approaching. Junction at platform. Passengers, airport, please stay on board. Next stop, road station.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
I'm Manveen Rana from The Story, a daily news podcast from The Times. Join me and my co-host, Luke Jones, for a deep dive into the big stories and investigations. Plus, each month, William Hague hosts an agenda-setting interview with a key newsmaker or big thinker. That's The Story, The Times' daily podcast that brings you one remarkable story told in depth. Listen every weekday on the Times Radio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a podcast from The Times. Go to thetimes.co.uk.
Hello, I'm Gabriel Marcotti, and welcome to The Game Podcast, the podcast that never for a single second just assumed that Manchester City would walk to the title. I'm joined by an elite panel of great football minds. It's Mr. Tony Evans, making a triumphant comeback, Mr. James Ducker, up somewhere in the Northwest, and of course, Rory K. Smith. Later on, I'll be asking, do the FA actually know exactly what they're doing? But we're actually going to do this in a constructive way, not a critical way this week. But first of all, let's start out in Wales. Okay, Tony, Swansea and Manchester City, we knew Swansea were good. We knew they were capable of good results. Maybe we didn't really expect them to go and take all 3 points against City, did we?
Well, I mean, you expect them to run a good show, but you'd think City have got the squad and you think they've got the power and the strength to have beaten them. I couldn't believe the way City played, to be honest. I mean, they let them have the ball in the midfield. They let them pass it around. They never pressed them. They let them get wide behind them. I thought it was a really poor performance from City. I was shocked, really. The conviction seems to be draining from them. And, you know, it does worry you, you know, when you, especially when there's Micah Richards after the game is sort of making comments like, you know, it'll be hard catching United. You know, I mean, this is a team that should be 10 points clear.
Yeah, James, I want to ask you about that Richards comment, because I know, obviously, you know, we in the media are horrible and petty, and sometimes people after games have like throwaway comments that get misinterpreted, but I mean, I don't know if you were there for when Richards made that statement, but
I was at United yesterday, Gab.
Okay, so you weren't, but did anybody point out to him, to your knowledge, that you're 1 point back and you have the head-to-head against Manchester United, which means that, very simply put, if you simply do your job and win all your games, you will win the title, and there's absolutely nothing that even Sir Alex Ferguson can do about it?
I'm sure I'll be amazed if some of the guys didn't put that to him. It's funny, Mike. It's almost like stream of consciousness when you're talking to him. He just kind of blurts things out, often without really putting too much thought into it. It's often why he can come across as quite outspoken, or maybe saying things that he probably truly doesn't mean. But I think Tony's point about kind of conviction's quite good. You know, we can't escape the fact that they've got 66 points, United have got 67. If, you know, if both win, you know, most of their games, they're potentially on course to set Premier League records for points hauls. It's kind of remarkable, really. So I'm loath to be overly kind of critical of City. They played badly and lost one game, and I think they won the previous.
Been there. James, the Premier League record, I think, I've heard a lot of people talk about this, breaking the record. I believe the record is 95 points, is that right? So I think it's mathematically impossible for both of them to pass that mark. But it's extremely unlikely that either one will, because they're not very good teams, are they?
One of them has a strong chance to break Chelsea's 95-point haul.
Can I take a step back here? Rory, I want to get you on this. All season long, we've been saying about how United aren't very good and City aren't playing to their full potential. If they really do have a chance to break the record that was set by Chelsea,
What is it? Does this say anything about the league this year, and that maybe it's just a season to forget?
I think there's a lot of teams from about third downwards who aren't very good.
To be honest, it seems when Chelsea set that, was that 2005 or 2006 that Chelsea set that mark? Mourinho's first season, wasn't it?
I think it was the second season.
Right. But you had United, obviously, was slightly in transition, but a decent side. You had Arsenal, who had won something within living memory. You had Liverpool, who were winning the FA Cup, the champions of Europe. You had a strong lead. Now, I think if you look at it, you have to assume that City, who've not really sort of clicked into gear, particularly since sort of November, being top hasn't suited them. United, who aren't as strong as they used to be, but I think we have to start admitting now that United are a really good team. They're not great individuals. They're not what they used to be. But look at their run of form. It's incredible. They are a good team.
We'll get United in a minute. On City, it struck me though. I mean, we read into this that the confidence is ebbing and stuff like this. If I were to be a little bit contrarian, I might point out that Swansea played extremely well.
Yeah.
And that Savage, in the end, it was an individual mistake. It was Savage who's not good and shouldn't have been starting because, you know, would have been starting if Lescott and company had been fit. And Colatore is not that good either. But they responsible for conceding a goal. And otherwise, they would have won that game. Or is that viewing the world through Mancini-coloured glasses?
I think I was about to say, you know, is this a Mancini colour? It's, you know, the fact is, they give away a penalty was missed. Swansea had good chances, aside from a concerted spell of pressure just before half-time and a little bit in the second half. You know, City didn't look like winning that game. And, you know, the players that City have got out on that pitch are good players. It's a good squad. You know, it's a, yeah, Savage isn't great, but, you know, the rest of them should have been able to dispatch Swansea as good as Swansea are. It was a lazy performance. It was a tactically naive performance, and it just looks as if this team should be 10 points clear at the top of the league. They've got better players than United.
Do you think United are that bad?
I don't think United are very good at all. I think Bilbao showed up United for how good they are. But you know what this has proven, and I've been saying this now for 3 years on this podcast, is what we've seen how great a manager Ferguson is in the last 3 years, and it's less about winning trebles as the force of will in dragging this mediocre squad by Manchester United standards to the top of the league and to European Cup finals. And you know, it's one of those things. You imagine what he'd do if he had City squad.
They should, Tony, you say about 10 points clear though, but you know, you can't escape the fact that whatever United's supposed limitations might be, as they have got a fantastic points haul. They've lost 3 games and they've drawn 4. You know, I mean, with the best will in the world, City are never going to be 10 points ahead of United. I mean, they've won all 14 games at home, City.
Gareth Barry coming off, you know, the first half, and I believe he threw a bit of a hissy fit. Tucker, I appreciate you weren't there, but you were closer than and you are closer to Gareth Barry right now than any of us. Not in biblical terms, of course, but
sitting on his knee.
It's kind of unlike. It looked like he kind of threw a bit of a hissy fit. Certainly wasn't very happy in seeing David Platt's face. Not that it's not perhaps a normal reaction, but it's unlike him, isn't it?
Very unlike him. I mean, yeah, he's a teacher's pet, isn't he? According to Jerry Barton. He is a consummate professional. You speak to Gareth Barry and he's very, very careful not to talk out of turn. You know, I'm sure privately he's has stronger words to say, but you very, very, very rarely see a show of dissent from Gareth Barry publicly, and I think he was just both miffed and angered that I think, you know, when he probably sees Nasri staying on the pitch, then you know, he might have cause to be upset, but I don't think it was particularly kind of helpful. Equally, you know, I admire Mancini for, I mean, obviously it didn't come off and it might have been the wrong player to come off, but I don't quite understand what's this issue that people have with a manager hauling a player off after half an hour or 37 minutes, whatever it was in this case. I mean, it's an admission that things aren't working and that something's got to give, something's got to change.
Ferguson's always been pretty good at that, hasn't he? To
make that move. It didn't work in this case, but Christ, I mean, the number of times managers like Mancini or, you know, Mourinho or whatever have done things like that, and it has paid off. You know, I'm sure he'll continue to do it, but I don't know if Barry was the right person to go up. You know, particularly when you see the kind of see how Swansea's midfield has performed.
To me, though, a manager taking a player off after half an hour, 37 minutes, is just an admission that the manager's got it wrong. It's nothing to do with the player. It's understandable that Barry has a strop because he's coming off in the first half, and that's quite embarrassing for a footballer.
Well, that may be the case, but the point is, though, is that if it's not working, though, surely, Barry, you would...
Oh, the manager has to change it, but yeah. it reflects worse. In those circumstances, it's always, you know, the player's had a strop, blah, 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 and that's bad, but it's the manager who should be criticised because they've obviously made a mistake tactically.
Yeah, but the manager can also be commended for not standing by his mistake in trying
That's true.
I think it's nice to see that, you know, City is such a happy camp at the moment, you know, because Carlito's back and, you know, it's fun for everyone.
Okay, so I want to ask about that because, and James, you can wrap up our little City segment here on this point, because he played in a reserve game, he scored a goal. I have no idea. I last watched the reserve game in November and it was horrible. But it wasn't City. I'm sure City's reserve games are better, but I don't know what you can learn from that. Does he look like he can come back this season and actually contribute? And is it something Mancini is considering, and should he consider it?
I think he is considering it most definitely. And as Dzeko continues to look laboured and they're struggling for goals away from home, then I think it will become an even greater consideration. I don't think he really wants to have to play Tevez. He's kind of been quite deeply hurt, Mancini, by some of the things that have happened. Particularly that TV interview really put Mancini's back up. But I think if it's a case of playing Tevez and potentially having a better chance of winning the league, you know, or not, then, you know, he's going to play him. I mean, they've got the Elite Development Squad, I'll refer to it in its correct name, they've got a game in Holland on Wednesday. Suggestion is that Tevez might actually stay back in train all week at Carrington, and you've got to wonder whether there's one eye on trying to involve him in the squad for the Chelsea game on Wednesday week.
Elite Development Squad, projects. I'm going to run a rampage. It used to be football.
I know. I just put that in there because I know it'd annoy you, Tony.
Just, you know, I honestly, you know, if I run amok and go mad today, I'm blaming you and your Elite Development Squad and Man City.
To be fair, Tony, there's always a slight risk you're going to run amok and on any given day.
Speaking of Elite Development Squads, Swansea, somebody made a crack that, you know, they're an Elite Development Squad for everybody else when people go and snap up Allen and Sinclair and all those guys. But just want to get a word on them. We've played Brendan Rodgers to high heaven. Tony, you've spent some time with him in the past. He's come out and he's said that he's effectively, I think, ruled himself out of the Chelsea job. I don't know to what degree he was in contention. Maybe he should have been. Does it, A, could you see him at a Chelsea-type club at some point? And B, does it make sense to rule yourself out so early? I mean, you don't know what they're offering you.
I could see him at a big club. It makes sense to turn down Chelsea at the moment because that's possibly the most dysfunctional club that ever existed. And while Chelsea are there, Manchester City and Mancini can feel good about themselves because it's a picture of harmony and sanity. The right thing to do is not go to Chelsea. He's establishing his credentials, which will get him a very good club in the not too distant future. You know, his career's had its setbacks. You know, Watford, but you know he's.
Why was he so bad at Watford?
Well, again, it was another club with problems behind the scenes.
They have the owner who's slightly...
Yeah, you know, he's shown his abilities in a stable environment down there, and he's got players doing simple things, doing good things. And I think, I'm hoping that he'll go on to be a star in, you know, in managerial terms.
Do you think, Tony, I think that if Wenger in the next few years, you know, decides to move on or whatever happens, I look at I look at Brendan Rodgers and I just think he'd be the perfect fit for Arsenal.
That's a good call.
Assuming, you know, obviously Gab, you know, it is still, like you say, it's still early stage in his managerial career, and we really have to hope he kind of continues on this upward curve. But I just look at his philosophy, his approach, his dignity, the way he handles himself, and I just think that he would, you know, fit well at a stable, well-run club with a very kind of rich footballing ethos.
The other factor is that at Swansea, his ideas fell on fertile ground due to the groundwork Martinez had done beforehand. So he didn't.
And Paulo Sousa, not just Martinez.
And Paulo Sousa, yeah. Mm-hmm. So there wasn't. He didn't. He wasn't.
Raised the handsome one too.
He wasn't. He's a very handsome man, Paulo Sousa. Isn't he a handsome man, Gab? He didn't have to. He didn't have to sort of persuade players who used to sort of hit and hope to play one-touch football. So Arsenal would fit. That's the Barcelona model, that you bring in a first team manager who fits the club's ethos. So he fits Rodgers at Arsenal. But then, having said that, I can't see Wenger down anywhere in the immediate future.
We're
and
digressing on Wenger, but yeah,
I was say the other thing is that in terms of the players at Swansea, they might like to remember the sort of the many, many cautionary tales of players who've left clubs where they do very well and go to other teams where they sink rather than swim, because players often fit a certain club, not others. So Allen,
we've discussed this before, that I think it's a system. No, I think we're in agreement on this, that it's, you know, it's very much a system. And yeah, I think apart from Joe Allen and perhaps one or two others, I don't know how well these guys would do at other clubs. But we have to talk about Manchester United, because you know, I think it's a fair few minutes into this podcast and we haven't paid our respects to United. Tucker, you were there. What struck me about this game was that I could be wrong, but I haven't seen him use the Welbeck Young Hernandez Rooney combination before, with Scholes behind. Is this something? Is this sort of the hyper attacking United? But might we see more of this and less of Nani?
In terms of the four of them, Gab, I'm not sure. I know it was the second time, only the second time this season, that Welbeck, Rooney, and Hernandez have started in tandem. It might only be like the second or possibly the first time that the four have played together. I mean, look, you know, if you'd have played those four against Athletic Bilbao, I'm sure they'd have been picked off and Bilbao would have run riot over United's midfield. But at home again, I mean, I know West Brom have had a good run of late, but you know, there are certain teams that Ferguson will play at home against certain opposition. He's never going to play those four in tandem against a Man City or a, you know, a leading or middling light in Europe.
The thing is, you know, Ferguson thought about it. He thought, she'll try this against the Dustbins or West Brom. Now, West Brom will be easier. You know, isn't Roy Hodgson one of the founders and members of the Old Trafford Wine Club?
So you're saying he's the new Steve Bruce? Stop it now.
Roy Hodgson is one of Europe's leading coaches, Tony, and I think you need to remember that. I think we need to discuss him as such. They're pliant opposition. United can play who they like at home against teams like that. They're not going to score. They're not going to win.
Why? Well, Ducker, are you with these two sort of, you know, negative Nellies here? That is West Brom. I mean, why should West Brom go in line? Did they lie down for United? Are they being unkind?
They actually played very well for the first 25 minutes, and Malumbu, Keith Andrews, and James Morrison in central midfield had far the better of Carrick and Scholes. I mean, Scholes was very erratic for those first 20 minutes, and they missed a terrific chance after about 5 minutes when Andrews kind of volleyed wide from about 6 yards out. I mean, if that had, you know, that had gone in, and invariably, you know, there's lesser teams you do need to take chances at Old Trafford. If that had gone in, it would have obviously been interesting to see what happened, but they just faded really after the first half hour or so, when Carrick and Scholes had, you know, a far easier time of it than they should have been. I mean, I just think that central midfield, you know, is ripe for exploitation. And if you look at those teams that have had joy against United this season, they've tried to play the big man through the middle and kind of pack the midfield. And Newcastle, Blackburn, you know, all did that very, very well. But I don't know. They did. I mean, the moment kind of Rooney's goal went in, the result looked inevitable, really. It was a bit of a shame.
Tony, you say that Ducker just said that midfield, Carrick's goals, was ripe for exploitation. I look at the other central midfielders who are, you know, available to him, or guys who can play there, and it's, you know, Giggs, who's obviously older than Scholes and you know, can really only play once a week. Obviously, Fletcher's out with his problem. Jones, when he's played in midfield, has been up and down. Cleverley's injured. Are they actually like a? Oh, I guess there's Anderson in the mix as well. If that's your bag of things
as well. No, so.
But he's could they actually? Are they actually an injury away from a big problem there?
I think it's a big problem now. It's not a very good midfield. You know, the cupboard's bare. You know, it's good teams will beat United and they'll beat them in midfields. Frankly, I don't know how the top of the league with that midfield.
So if good teams. So just to wrap this up, if good teams, if using the Evans theorem, if good teams beat United, and United are top of the league, and only three teams have beaten United all season,
there are not
the
very many good teams.
Is crap.
Yeah, I think we can agree on that.
But Gab, I think that United are so attuned to being successful in the Premier League. They know how to win. They've done it time and again. They're very, very comfortable there. I personally think the clear indication of where this team is being shown in Europe when they have lost. Not to the elite teams, have lost to good, but still what you'd consider maybe middling European teams or lost or drawn in Basel, Benfica, Athletic Bilbao, and Ajax, and I just think, you know, they often play three in midfield, and Fergie's just got this compulsion still to 4-4-2, and they've often been overrun. And you know, you saw that against City as well in October. But he has had bad injuries in that kind of midfield department. But I still don't think that even if he had a full roster of players that, you know, they're good enough to play just two in there. They need to play three in there. Really.
Tony, these are players that 5 years ago would have been seen as squad players for United. You know, it's not. And I think this is, you know, I think there's a bigger issue here with United, is that while as a club and a business they've made massive profits, it's all gone to service and glazer debt and hasn't been reinvested in that squad. And where it's shown most visibly is in that.
VoiceOver describes what's happening on your iPhone screen.
VoiceOver on, settings.
So you can navigate it just by listening.
Books, contacts. Calendar, double tap to open. Breakfast with Anna from 10 to 11.
And get on with your day. Accessibility. There's more to iPhone.
It feels.
I think next thing, if you keep this up, next thing you're going to want is fans having a say in the way clubs are run, and perhaps even like supporters' trust and other weirdo like inappropriate things like that. Rory, Roy Hodgson, and to be fair, he might have been misquoted by the evil media. I saw some quotes that said that he might be amenable to the England job if offered. Stop laughing. First of all, I'm assuming he didn't receive the letter that Fergie and supposedly Steve Keane also received. But secondly, maybe just send it to the Scots. Might it actually make sense from West Brom's perspective, given that, you know, been the 2 years, he's stabilized, he's not getting any younger, the team's well organized. Maybe they should be looking for, you know, thank him and say goodbye. And
Possibly. I think West Brom have got that structure in place that means that the manager changes, but Dan Ashworth, the director of football, sort of maintains sort of an oversight of it. So they'd probably be okay. I think if you look at Fulham, leaving Liverpool aside, that was obviously a job that Hodgson was totally out of his depth with, but if you look at Fulham, he tends to leave very well organised sides that can kind of keep themselves ticking over for a while. And I think from England's point of view it makes sense as well. He's got a proven track record with minor nations. He got Switzerland to the World Cup.
Now you're dissing England.
You know, and Ducker, I think a very similar level of football. Probably slightly. I mean, who have England got who's anywhere near as good as Stefan Shepwisa? No one.
All right, Ducker, I'm going to give you the last words on this. I'm not even going to bother asking Tony his opinion here because he's anti-English as well. You're the biggest England fan here.
What, Gab, why do you think this?
What?
Why do you think I'm a big England fan?
Because you must be more of an England fan than the Scouse
and I will take responsibility for this because I am clearly the biggest
England fan here, which is that I think if Harry Redknapp doesn't take the job, I'm speculating about the England. More of this later. I think in short term, it might not be a bad idea for West Brom to usher Hodgson out because they have to plan for the future, at some point, and they do have the structure in place. And obviously, Roy's not getting any younger. Hodgson is interim boss for the Euros, and then Redknapp to take over afterwards because he doesn't walk into a team with Wilshere coming back from injury and Rooney suspended and no time to prepare. Might not be entirely absurd. Okay, now, in our debate this week, we are not trying to deliberately flout the diktats and edicts that come from the folks within Wembley Stadium, which would be the FA, but we're going to take a look at the way that they're recruiting the new England boss. We will not speculate because we're not allowed to speculate. It is verboten. But I want to throw out to you a few basic questions.
Right, I'm only going to take part in this conversation, this discussion, if I can have a musical instrument. We're in a studio. We want to live, we want to give it a bit of bounce, we want to give it a bit of je ne sais quoi. And talking about England managers' recruitment has not got any je ne sais quoi.
I have a maraca.
Yes, of course, Rory K. Smith, who tends to go and emulate whatever the bigger boys do. I can just let the record reflect that Tony went and got some sort of cowbell. And I don't know that we are licensed for music on this podcast, please.
We are more entertaining than the England band.
There you go. Ducker, I'm going to start with you while the children calm down here. Let's imagine you're one of those consultant types brought in by the FA, because I'm sure they haven't brought in enough of them. If you were to indicate what the right process should be to approach an England boss or a potential future England boss, hypothetically, where would you begin? I mean, would you ring up the agent? Would you rely on personal relationships? Or is it, as somebody once said of Alex Horn, he doesn't know anybody and nobody knows him?
I would say that it is ludicrous employing a recruitment agency to try and recruit a football manager, because the football industry is unlike any other, and you cannot apply the same models and practices that you do if you're searching, I don't know, for an accountant or a lawyer.
Aston Villa employed a recruitment agency, a headhunting firm, right? And
yeah,
they ended up with Gerard Houllier.
There's loads of clubs that do. I'm not saying that they don't. I'm just saying that it is. You're getting non-footballing people trying to make
football.
Okay,
so you're a football
decisions.
Person. You like football. You write about football. You watch a lot of football. You played football. What would you do? How would you go about doing it?
What, with regards to England?
Yes. Pretend you're English.
I don't know. I mean, they're in a very curious situation whereby they've got a major tournament, and I think someone needs to make a decision. Do we look to appoint a full-time guy, or do we appoint an interim?
What would you
and
decide?
They should have made that decision by now. I don't think dragging this kind of process out until the end of the season is really going to benefit anyone. I don't know if they appoint someone at the end of May on a permanent basis. I'm not really sure that's what with a major tournament 2 weeks away. The best way to go. But I think whatever they do, I literally do think they are between a rock and a hard place. I know he's sitting on the fence, but I don't really see...
You do not have a future as a consultant. You have to come up with strong answers and say them forcefully and raise your voice and shout when you do it and charge lots of money.
I'm a fail. I'm going to admit complete failure on that point.
I think we all know that in football, when a manager's appointment or a player is appointed or a player is signed, that the idea that it just happened is completely ridiculous. Managers already...
Wait, no, hang on, Roy. Don't they send a letter saying, like, I would asking their employer, like, I request permission to speak to so-and-so, and then they wait for the letter to come back via registered post, and isn't that not how it works?
I mean, I would hope they're sending at least faxes. Football works on faxes, Gab. Exactly. We all know that. Now, I can't believe that the FA... We'll let it get to May and then suddenly think, right, do you know what? We've got these finals coming up. We probably need some fella in charge. That they should be making those phone calls now. It's a simple matter. They obviously want Redknapp. Ring him. Ring his agent. Ask him if he's interested. I'm sure he'd say yes. He's made it clear he wants to hear what they're going to say. He seems to be the unanimous choice. And if we're honest, there's nobody else. There's what? Hodgson is another option.
You're speculating about the England manager. Now we've been banned from doing that. So stop.
Fine. There are no decent English managers of
Wait, sorry,
of
you
the
can only speculate
ones.
If you have factual information. Sorry, go ahead.
I can hear a cowbell in the distance across the Swiss cantons. There's a yodeling voice. Riddle-a-doo. It's Roy. He's going to be England manager. That's how stupid this whole thing is. Right, here's the recruitment policy. Here's the recruitment policy. What they do is they go, oh yeah, we'll think about this. We'll employ loads of people. We'll spend loads of money. And then they'll go for the flavour of the month. The flavour of the month is Harry. Get the flavour of the month in there and send Harry with our boys to the Ukraine. Victory!
You know, but you joke about this, but do you imagine that if they do go down to the more patriotic route, should we be concerned at the prospect of Stuart Pearce dyeing his hair black and growing a little moustache? Given his new haircut,
I would have thought he'll overeat, get a chunky cigar, and talk about biting people on the features.
You've got to bear in mind when you get into the sort of the side parting as power haircut discussion, you've got Tony Evans here who has a side parting.
Can't we just abandon the England team altogether?
Okay, we did say we were going to be constructive about this.
I don't
but
understand.
We raise the white flag at every tournament anyway.
But so that's not really true. You're being so negative. I mean, you don't necessarily need to lose every time you play. Like, okay, I'll give you a different example, right? And especially if we've got Rory here, Spain, right? Mm. You like Spain?
Love the paella.
Rumor is that you're looking at Spain and youth development. There you go.
But talking Spain, we got maracas.
Okay, exactly. So Spain were Sound perennial effects. Rubbish underachievers. Who, you know, they tried different options with their managers. They appointed expensive ones. They appointed cheap ones, foreign ones,
racist ones.
Yeah. Okay. Yes, you have to open that kind of worms. But and then all of a sudden they went, and I'm sure there were sort of negative, like Spanish ducker types who's like, we're rubbish. We're never going to win anything. Let's raise the right flag, right? But they won, and they were pretty good now.
Yeah, you can't give up on England. There will come a point, just by the law of averages, in which when England aren't inept. But I think James is right that maybe we're not looking at the bigger picture. Generally, we need to think less about who the manager is and getting Harry in, as we all think he's great, and he plays this lovely football, although he doesn't, and his teams collapse in March constantly.
Top it.
And maybe think about the players we're producing and how that's going to work. Maybe we don't. Maybe, yeah, you do just get someone in who'll get you through Euro 2012. Maybe Stuart Pearce with his power side parting isn't a bad bet, because they're not going to win it. They're not going to win the 2014 World Cup, as Brazil are. They're probably not going to win the 2016 World Euros, because they don't have any decent players. Start looking towards the future. That's what England have
but
to
they
be.
Have
it's,
been
it's
looking.
It's a good point, Rory. I mean, what's quite interesting is we traditionally have all, I know there's been slight variations on it, but we've traditionally always played 4-4-2, and the guy who's the firm favourite to potentially get the job is a huge advocate of 4-4-2, and I just wonder whether they need to start thinking more about, like you say, the players, the formations, looking at what we've got and how we can maybe go forward, rather than thinking that, oh, the manager's the...
So what you're suggesting is, like,
solution.
They need a manager?
Well, exactly. I know. Who needs one? Right, who's the captain?
No, they need a holistic manager. They need someone who's going to look at things in depth over the next 5-10 years.
Okay,
you
but what's
think
the point of
tomorrow?
A manager? Okay, I'm going to take a few steps back here, right? First of all, right, a manager manages the team. In fact, he's the England coach, actually,
correct.
Right? So how are you going to expect him to be like, oh, I need to worry about what's going to happen, you know, in 10 years' time with England, when no national team manager lasts 10 years? That's point number one. Number two, I believe they do have a technical director. The Trevor Brooking has a job, and Gareth Southgate has a job. And we've heard, if Lansley were here, and he would tell us about their new centre at, was it Burton, where they've got this big library and lots of playing fields and a hotel and stuff like that, and how that's geared towards improving coaching. I was told by somebody else I really rate that there's a, probably none of you know who she is because none of you like England, but there's a young lady who comes from the, her background's in a different sport, and she's in charge of training the FA coaches, or she's got some sort of role that she's very, very sharp, and she's recruiting people to it. So somebody at the FA, probably not Bernstein because he only rocked up very recently, but somebody at the FA a few years ago did put some of these wheels into motion. And when we talk about producing players, you know, ultimately the clubs do that. If anything, maybe it's about producing coaches, but you can't say they haven't put resources into this thing in Burton, they at least have. According to Lansley.
They have, and there's the fact they're making some effort is praiseworthy. The problem with the FA and with English football
that,
in general...
And before that, you had Wilkinson and his white paper, the problem set up the academies.
With the FA and English football in general is that we change things left, right and centre depending on who else is winning. So now we have the coach in the coaches system, which is basically an attempt to try and get the La Masia thing writ large over English football. Burton was meant to be Clairefontaine as the French had just won the World Cup. At some point, they'll come up with the same system as Germany.
The Ajax Academy.
Yeah, exactly. You know. It keeps changing. We need to somewhere needs to guide football.
Is you get lucky with a bunch of players who come together at the same time, a generation, and you know, and that's and of course we had the in England the golden generation, and right.
They may yet win something.
This is more sort of a potassium generation.
All right, stop it. Just to wrap this up then. Then from what you're saying though is if there are longer term structural issues. And does it make sense to appoint a short-term manager for this Euros rather than go and put pressure on on the hypothetical favorite who's currently managing Spurs, but who I won't name? you know, because if that is going to be the attitude, I mean, look, Otto Rehhagel with a horrible team won the Euros.
That's the thing. You can win with a squad that's not great.
That's all people care about.
Yeah, you've got a bit of tactical awareness. You've got a bit of organisational ability. It's called management. And, yeah, you know, it's what we're going to do. Well, what they're going to do. Where? I shouldn't use the word where because I'm the last where in the world. But what they're going to do in the summer, you know, they're going to send Harry there and send the boys to go over the top. You know, fix bayonets. That's the only tactic.
I agree, Gab. I think the an interim appointment is a very sensible option.
Roy Hodgson.
Do not ask for whom the bell tolls. It tolls for England.
Well, he couldn't have done much worse than Dalglish, could he?
Stop it.
I'd happily put him in charge.
All right. I'm going to say something to wrap this, and then we'll move on. Apologies for putting you all through this. Time now for some quick hits. Liverpool fall at Sunderland. Champions League football at Anfield looks very far away at the moment. Tony, what chance is there that Kenny Dalglish will not be in charge next season? And what chance that Damien Comolli won't be around?
I suspect they'll both be around. I think it is in question. I don't think it's 100% certain either will be back. But I think winning the League Cup, the Carling Cup, has done enough for Dalglish. It's a trophy. You know, the things that used to be important in football before, like the Czechs become the most serious thing. Let's get an open-top bus and parade our fourth-place Czech. Glory!
To be fair, Tony, you sent a very angry tweet about the League Cup at Liverpool at the weekend, as I recall.
Yeah, no, it was a sarcastic tweet. It's you know, because people are saying sack Dalglish 2 weeks after he won the League Cup. And so I said, yeah, let's all storm Anfield and wreck the trophy room.
It doesn't work on Twitter.
Yeah, exactly. Sarcasm doesn't always come across. I thought you were being serious. Ricardo Fuller seems like an amiable chap, yet this is the same guy who got into a fight with Andy Griffin a few years back, and so I'm not sure if that counts. And on Saturday, he figured it would be a good idea to stomp on Brano Ivanovic, duly getting sent off. Ducker, you've been there, no doubt. What makes a person snap like that? And please, feel free to speak from your own personal experience and times that you've snapped.
I used to get snapped on the football field. But if I ever got snapped myself, I can't read Ricardo Fuller's mind, sadly, and nor am I his psychologist. But I don't know. Some players have a shorter fuse than others, and Fuller's record suggests that he is prone to moments of madness, so I don't really think there's much more to it than that.
It was pretty remarkable because it looked like, you know, for one minute he's making sure Ivanovic will never have children again, and the next minute he's like putting his hand out saying like, yep, sorry, taking responsibility for it. And you could tell he felt bad immediately. He's not one of those, you know, dirty or crazy guys. He's just somebody who just, you know, flicks a switch.
Mm. I mean, it's hard to define that heat of the moment, isn't it? But it does. There is a split second when kind of rationality seems to go out of the window, and, you know, some players manage to control those emotions a bit better than others, but others, you know, some do fail, and Ricardo Fuller failed on that particular time.
Speaking of Chelsea, it's 2-2 for Robbie Di Matteo. Rory, were you impressed? And what scenario, or give me a scenario whereby Robbie Di hangs on to his job next season?
The scenario is that...
Wins the treble?
That he wins the treble and takes charge of England at the Euros. No, the scenario is that he gets them through in the Champions League 2-0 against Napoli. They fall at some point to a side who are actually quite good, in Barcelona, Real Madrid, and Arsenal collapse a little bit, or Spurs collapse, which is possible, very possible at the moment, and Chelsea sneak fourth. I think in that case he might have a chance,
and they win the FA Cup,
or he could buy a really nice coat, get some designer stubble and start sort of making mystic pronunciations, and he might trick Roman Abramovich into thinking he's Jose Mourinho. I don't think Robbie Di Matteo is getting that job.
There you go. Another unseen goal, or Wembley goal, as they like to call it in Germany, as Clint Hill scores for QPR against Bolton, but the assistant doesn't see it. Tony, you were a referee in a previous life, albeit one with a gun-toting linesman. Gun-toting or heat-packing, as the kids say these days. Have you heard a single compelling argument against goal-line technology? And what did you make of the FA statement?
I mean, there is no arguments about it. You know, you can see immediately. It's not something you have to stop the game, really. It's not something that you have to agonise about. That sort of Hawkeye technology, ball goes over the line, there's a beep, it's done. So, you know, why not use it? The FA passed the buck on to FIFA. They won't let us do it. Well, go on. Have some balls. Go on. Why don't you install goal line technology and say, go ahead, kick us out of FIFA over this?
I would have thought you'd show more love for it. I thought it was a very brave and proactive statement. No, I didn't. I didn't. I thought it was just ridiculous. We had two relegation six-pointers this weekend, Blackburn winning at Wolves and QPR losing at Bolton, plus Wigan drawing against Norwich. Ducker, put your rep on the line. Which of these five teams is going down?
Wigan and Wolves and QPR, both of whom will deserve it for making stupid decisions to sack their managers.
Tony, your suggestion is to relegate all five teams all five, and go with an 18-team Premier League.
Change the rules just for 1 year and get rid of them. In fact,
and don't promote anybody.
Relegate everyone up to like about what I think fifth.
That would include relegating Liverpool. Just so
you know what? I'm over it all.
Tottenham lose at Everton. It's their third straight defeat, but they actually played rather well in the second half, I thought. Rory Kay, you were there, so you will probably say that, no, that's not the case. They were awful. Now, the rest of us in the knee-jerk media just kind of blame these results on the England job speculation, which we were told not to engage in. But were they maybe just a bit unlucky and deserving to get more points, as Harry said?
Not really, no. I think... they were sort of okay first half, they were better second half, but they didn't create that many chances. And to be honest, Everton, apart from one little moment at the very end when Luis Saha hit the post, Everton never really looked panicked. To me, Spurs, I've seen them three times this week, I've seen all three of their defeats, they look like a side who don't have a plan.
It's funny because I watched Match of the Day and they told me that Everton pressed for 90
Match
minutes.
Match of the Day lies. The other thing I would say is Harry Redknapp's teams collapse in March. Because he doesn't train them very well.
Okay, enough negativity about Harry
Arsenal
on this show.
Going to finish third.
What are you saying?
Arsenal are clearly going to finish third. Arsenal are clearly going to finish third.
Gabriele, one for you. I hear Mourinho finally managed to wind up Pep Guardiola. What did he say that was so offensive?
Well, he came out and he said, Pep Guardiola is just like me. And Pep, who's put up with a lot this season, I think that was just too much, he said. Well, except for the fact that we both like to win, I think anybody who looks at our body of work and the things we've said and done over the years will come to a slightly different conclusion. I would throw in that in addition to their love of winning, they both give off a certain metrosexual vibe. Although in Jose's case, that is no longer the case because I think he's a lot less snappy than he was a few years ago. That's all we've got time for this week. But remember, you can go to www.thetimes.co.uk. You'll find your news, your gossip, your analysis. You can also follow us all on Twitter. We're on there. I'm on there. Rory K's on there. Ducker's on there. After a hiatus, no less. And of course, Tony Evans is on there as well. It's a privilege that you choose to spend your time with us via this podcast. So hope you do so again next week. Bye-bye.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.